Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon here on KTOO 104.3 Juno and KAUK 91.7 Juno and Auk Bay from listener-supported KTOO studios. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan or on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, December 15th, and I'm your host, Andy Klein. Thanks for joining the conversation on this wintry day. Finally winter. And as the holiday season ramps up, what better way to celebrate than by enjoying the Symphony Holiday Concert with special brassy guests from Sitka. A comedy show is coming up that's for a wonderful cause, and we'll hear about a show that would help fulfill Marion's wish. If you're still on the market for gifts this holiday season, you're in luck because the Stuffed Holiday Market is coming up. And finally today, we will preview a beautiful new book that tells the story of Juno's most famous wolf, Romeo. That's all ahead today. I hope you'll join me. And for the weekend weather, yes, winter has finally arrived. There's snow on the ground and snow in the forecast this weekend. Snowy tonight with accumulation up to 3 inches and 1 to 3 inches expected tomorrow and Saturday night, as well as Sunday. Temperatures are low to the lows are going to be in the mid-20s and the highs in the mid-30s. So some of that snow will also be mixed with rain. So it'll be a little slushy, but wintry, which I welcome. I hope you do too. Juno Audubon Society would like to have your help. The Christmas bird count is December 16th. And if you happen to see a rare or seldom seen bird, please send a note to this address. It's an email address, which is @large_b@juno-audubon-society.org. Did you get that? You can go to juno-audubon-society.org, by the way, too, to find that email address, but it is @large_b@juno-audubon-society.org. Do your part for the birds. We'll be back with you in just a moment.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha anikak, gunish cheese.
It's Juno Afternoon from your community-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm Andy Klein, and the Juno Symphony Holiday Concert is coming up. And that is a great concert because not only is it wonderful holiday music, but it also is a concert that brings together our many communities in Southeast Alaska because it brings in the Sitka Holiday Brass. And Roger Smith, the director of the Sitka Holiday Brass, is with us.
Hey, Andy.
Roger, how are you?
Nice to be here.
Good to see you. And Charlotte Truitt, who's the executive director of Juno Symphony, is going to join us in a moment here. She's getting in here as we speak, so we'll talk to her when she walks in as well. But Roger, thanks so much for coming in, and what a great time of year to kind of share music here in Juno.
We were rehearsing last night, and we've got players from actually all over the country that are part of this show, and it started snowing while we were playing
there you go.
We were all kind of playing, and someone who was, I think they had rest in their parts, they started looking behind. Pretty soon the music kind of came to a slow stop, and everybody's just entranced by watching these beautiful snowflakes coming down. It's just,
where's your rehearsal space?
Last night we were at Chapel by the Lake, and then we'll move to Thunder Mountain.
Well, that's a great spot to be
look at snow.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it got us in the mood.
That's great.
Yeah.
And you've been doing this. Have you been doing Sitka's been doing this with the Juno Symphony for a number of years now, right? Five years or so?
Yeah, I think about 5 years. Yeah, we started it, we did a completely with K2OO's partnership. We did an online, during COVID. That was our first thing. And we brought in some musicians and, everybody tested and masked. And I mean, it was intense.
There's been a few of these things that happened during COVID that have continued on now, which actually kind of brings a little bit somehow something positive coming out of that whole
100%
experience.
Yeah. It really sort of drove us to, the musicians that that participated, you know, it was such a, yeah, it was just such an unusual experience. I think you kind of sort of felt like, you know, like the last musician. I mean, I'm right. sure all musicians that were doing this in places felt the same, but you sort of feel like you're the last musicians on the earth still playing music because, you know, most everything's shut down, but, you know, like you're just like, you know, like, okay, here we are, but we're in a community, those who are visiting, and we're, you know, we can't really interact with the community, but,
right.
But we're going to make music and we're going to do it, you know, and again, KTU came in with the RoboCams, which is great. And then there's this like great feeling because suddenly you're making music again and you feel like, you know, like it's a terrible feeling.
I mean,
for all of us, but as a musician that, you know, loses the ability to share music.
Right. Yeah. Artists, I think everywhere we're feeling that. Yeah, but here's something positive that came out of it. So now the holiday cheer concert is something that's going to be, now part of this is going to be at the lobby of the Slam. Is that right? Or is the whole thing the lobby of the Slam?
No, we'll be doing it at Thunder Mountain.
I think. Oh, you first partnered. I'm sorry. I'm just kind of reading this as we go. First, it was first done at the at the lobby of the Slam, and
correct.
Now it's moved on.
Yep,
and it'll be at the Thunder Mountain High School, and it's a couple of concerts happening December 16th at 7:30, and then the 17th at 3 p.m. At Thunder Mountain High School. Really nice place to play.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we like about it is the audience is so close and we're so close to the audience. So, you know, they talk about sometimes the fourth wall. There's no fourth wall. You're just like, it kind of feels like they're in your living room and we're in there, you know, and we're just playing music.
Which is so nice with a symphony, right? Because the sound is just coming straight from the instruments, right?
Straight at you. Yep.
And you hear all I love the thing about this watching a symphony live that's so wonderful is the music's beautiful, but you really, when you're there in person, you really understand it's all these different individuals coming together to make this one big, amazing sound. So you get to hear every single little thing that's going on. You get to watch every single person. Sometimes you'll key in on one person for a while, and then you'll look at other people for a while.
Yeah.
All that. There's so much to look at and experience when you're watching symphony.
Yeah, I think that recorded music is great, but I think it created a huge misunderstanding in the world, which is that music actually is not just an art form that's oral. It's a visual and oral art form. And seeing musicians play their instruments, seeing the sound being produced, it gives you an entirely different level of experience.
It's performance art. I mean, it's physical as well, right? I mean, it's all of those things.
All those things.
Yeah. All right. Well, Charlotte's just walking in right now. Charlotte, join the party. How you doing?
Good afternoon.
Great. Good afternoon to you as well. And thanks for coming in. We appreciate it. Just been talking to Roger about how this is maybe one of those good things that came out of the experience of having to do these virtual things, right? And now we've got this great partnership happening every year when the Sitka Brass comes up and joins Juno Symphony. So tell me a little bit about what the program is going to be.
Oh, well, thank you for having us.
Sure.
It was a fantastic endeavor now has gone on. This is our fourth year, and Roger and I have been working on this the whole time, you know, through the pandemic and to today. And every year we've tried to make the concert a little bit different, adding new flair and new music and different offerings from the community, really bringing the community together. And so this year we have Vox Borealis and the Symphony Strings in the first half, along with the brass is going to accompany the Vox Borealis singers. And a lot of people know them as an a cappella group.
Right.
This is going to be a really nice treat to hear them with wonderful accompaniment. And having this great brass joining them is going to be a really special moment. I'm looking forward to that.
What are some of the considerations when you're talking about a vocal group that has this a cappella background to bring in brass? I mean, that is a big sound to join with the vocal group. What are some of the things?
You nailed it.
Yeah.
How to the balance is the most critical thing. Yeah. I mean, in terms of coordination, we have to think about, and the piece we're doing is a big gospel piece, so it's a loud piece. But if we just sort of go full tilt, then
you drown it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So there's moments we can go full tilt, and there's moments they can go full tilt. But when we come together, we have to, you know, sort of observe volume levels and balance.
Yeah. It's fun. I'm kind of smiling thinking about it because there's just nothing like seeing a brass band live. You know, I mean, when you hit those big peaks, it's like four everyone trombones, sits back in their seat a little bit, right?
A tuba, two horns, four trumpets. Yeah. It's like that old Memorex commercial where your hair is peeled back. I mean, it's great sound, but it's a lot of, that's exciting for people. I think that, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, but, you know, we have so many audiences, it's still a new experience. And they're just amazed. They're like, wow, I had no idea what it feels like to be sort of inside this kind of resonant sound that's just ringing and filling up the space. And it's excited. It's exciting.
Yeah.
It's
Charlotte, have you been doing it at Thunder Mountain for the last few years, or is this a new venue?
We have done it at Thunder Mountain the last 3 years when we've been in person.
Right.
And it's a great opportunity for us to make a concert available in the valley. And also there's ample parking. And that is an issue that we run into sometimes when we're downtown, especially if we get a snowstorm and you lose a lot of parking. It's a wonderful venue. It's an intimate setting. I mean, the visual is really good. The sound is really great. It's the right size for the auditorium, and we're really happy to bring it to the Valley area, and it's worked out really well.
Yeah.
But we are selling out because it is a smaller venue.
That's what I was going to ask. So how can people go about getting the tickets and those kinds of things?
Well, we do have seats still available for Saturday night, and they can go to our website, junosymphony.org, and get those seats. I would encourage people, you know, sometimes all of us that are promoting events, we encourage people to buy early, but this time we're not crying wolf. We really mean it. You need to get those seats early, get on the website this afternoon and secure a place on Saturday night. Sunday is completely full, and so we don't have any options left for Sunday. So I don't know. It's something for people to mark their calendars next year. This
good
has got to be on the plan.
Though. This is good.
This is great.
Yeah. I'm sure people are just in the, you know, especially just getting that first snow. People are in the mood to hear how this is it.
Yeah,
we've got it going on now.
We got
winter's happening. Holidays are happening. It's on full bore. Well, it's the Juno Symphony Holiday Concert. And again, the Sitka Holiday Brass are coming into town as well and are a part of it.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about? Maybe the program or anything else with people, maybe some things people can look forward to hearing?
Well, I think Roger could really speak to that. I got to hear a little bit of their rehearsal last night, and it's really something for everybody. There's jazz, there's traditional, sacred, I mean, a little bit of everything. And Roger is just a master of programming. And so I think you should speak to that, Roger.
Sure, yeah. And I like to just say a little, you know, part of the reason I'm able to do the program is because, you know, when we talk about bringing the Sitka Holiday Brass, I'm like the Sitkin, but otherwise, it's a tradition we've had in Sitka where, for around 20 years, we bring in just the top brass players in the world to play with us. So this concert will have trumpet players from the Seattle Symphony, the Columbus Symphony, a horn player from the San Francisco Symphony, another horn player who is on a lot of, she played on Moana, Coco, Star Wars, big studio musician in L.A.
And that's really cool. Are these friends of yours through the years that you've kind of say, hey, come on up. I was going to say call in a favor, but it's not a favor. Come to Alaska.
No,
it's amazing, right?
No, it's something that Alaska's a really special place to visit. And, I studied and worked as a musician in the Bay Area and got to become friends with some members of the San Francisco Symphony when I was there. And our first year in Sitka, when we built our performing arts center, I had been doing brass concerts, but I wanted to do something really special. So I called my friend and former teacher and asked if he wanted to come up. And he said, yeah, I'd love to come up, trombone player in the San Francisco Symphony. And then he said, you want to help finding folks? And I said, sure, that sounds great. So then he says, Mark Inouye, who's come and played here, would love to come. And Mark is, I would say top three orchestral trumpet players in the country and just stands out, international player, international reputation. And so Mark was like, yeah, I'll come. And then pretty soon it just started snowballing.
That's cool.
You know, we try to make sure that part of it is people are coming. They're not coming for the money. They're not coming because they're coming, and they're coming for Alaska, but they keep coming year after year because we believe that music should be something that is really fun and joyous for everybody, and we really kind of go back to that. I think people come up here and they love the feeling of playing this music. I try to put together a program that is pretty hard. You know, I know we've got great players, so we can do extraordinary music, really difficult music. We're doing, for example, Prokofiev's Troika, which is originally written for orchestra and has, you know, the trumpet players playing it. You know, breakneck speed, the fastest trumpet playing you'll hear. And so we program knowing we have these great musicians.
Wow,
and
yeah.
It gives us a really wide range of music that we can draw from. And so
what a thrill for the folks at the Juno Symphony to be able to, I mean, it happens. We have these people come in. It happens with this little town of ours and Sitka as well, these little communities that we have. But
the magic of
Alaska. People like coming in. Yeah.
People love being in Alaska. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things that draw people to this area. One is the sense of community amongst, you know, those in our town, but also amongst the musicians, you know, that they're able to share together in a very, you know, kind of a very focused several days in one of the most beautiful places in the world, Southeast Alaska. And it's a great opportunity for the Juno Symphony members to play alongside these outstanding musicians.
Everybody
has a great time.
Cool,
I mean, yeah. it's a wonderful blending of talent and heart. And I think people will be inspired and, you know, it'll fill them up with joy.
Yeah. And well, it's already filled up on Sunday. So the Sunday show is already sold out. But the Saturday show, the 7:30 show at Thunder Mountain High School, tickets are still available at junosymphony.org. Charlotte and Roger, thanks so much for coming in and telling us a little bit about it. Have a great, amazing holiday cheers concert.
Thank you.
Thanks
so much for coming
Appreciate
in. It's great to see you. Well, KTOO turns 50 this January. We're making this milestone by marking a celebration with you, the community that has supported locally owned airwaves in Juneau for 5 decades. As part of our celebrations, we'd love to hear how KTOO impacts you. So we're looking for audio submissions that are up to 60 or 90 seconds in length that share your thoughts, memories, or your driveway moments or personal stories you have about the station. All that we can use on the air. To submit, record your message on your smartphone and email it to junoafternoon@ktoo.org. There's also instructions for getting good audio that can be found on our homepage at ktoo.org. We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks. Well, everyone, get ready for Marion's Wish, Comedy for a Cause. It's going to be happening Saturday on from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Crystal Saloon. And with us are two of the folks that are going to be part of it, John Doerr and Amber, a.k.a. Bubbles. How are you guys doing?
Very well. Thanks
good,
for having us.
Good. Yeah. Well, this is a really fascinating and really wonderful story of trying to fulfill a wish for someone who's quite ill, and trying to see if you can, you know, make some good of it. So tell us a little bit about the background of the of what we're talking about here, Marion's Wish. Tell us about Marion and the wish
sure.
and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Marion, I grew up with Marion. I'm born and raised Junoite here. And I've stayed friends with her throughout the years. And she was actually diagnosed with cervical cancer about a year ago. They caught it kind of late, so they were really aggressive with the chemo. And a few days before Thanksgiving, she was told by her doctors, she was going up to Anchorage for chemo all the time. They told her they can't do anything further. And rather than her having hopefully a few years, now they told her she would have a few months.
So hospice, that sort of going on that track is really the prognosis at this point.
Sadly, yes.
Yeah. So there was someone who's facing the end of life. And so but also, of course, is someone who has ambitions and dreams and wishes. And one of the things was a wish to do what?
Yeah. So, you know, there's three friends that we really sat down with her and said, what do we want to do? How can we make this the best possible couple months for you and the kids? So she has two kids. Wonderful. They are 12 and 14. And her wish is to bring them to Disneyland. And she is just so, so happy. She said that the kids even mentioning them going to Disneyland got excited. So we really want to make this possible. Right now, we are at about $5,500 on the GoFundMe. We have an amazing comedy event going on tomorrow, and that's pretty much sold out. So if you don't have seats, look for scalpers out front. Maybe those will be out there. Who knows?
Encouraging illegal activity of scalping tickets.
Oh, no, never. And, you know, we're going to be doing more fundraisers. This is going to happen. I'm going to make it happen.
Is there an overall goal for money that needs to be raised?
$20,000 is the overall goal, and it's completely doable.
Yeah, I would think so, too. John, tell us a little bit about your involvement in this, how you got involved, and what you're going to be doing tomorrow night.
Sure. Yeah. Well, a bit of my background. So I'm from Canada originally, lived in Los Angeles for several years as I was performing stand-up comedy and some acting. That's what I still do. That's how I make my living. That's how I put shoes on my kids'
feet. That's amazing. You're a working actor.
Correct.
That's incredible. Congratulations.
Oh, geez.
Thanks. I mean, I think that's an amazing thing to actually make a living performing art or doing art or pursuing something in the visual arts.
Oh, like I feel
acting, it's incredible.
I feel very lucky.
Yeah,
yes, amazing. I had a great, I've always, I painted myself into a corner. I can't do anything else. And right now, actually,
no other skills.
Zero. Absolutely zero. I couldn't have a desk job. I wouldn't know what to do.
Right.
I'm very lucky in that I was able to make a career out of my imagination to a certain degree. And now I do Chevy commercials. But anyway, I also travel the world doing stand-up comedy. That's what I do.
Chevy's a pretty good brand, man.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty good.
Well, together, let's drive.
Yeah. Well, I know. I heard that. I recognize that voice.
Well, there you go. Well, I'm an actor.
Yes.
So, so that's my background. I met my partner, Christina, who Amber knows as well. And Christina is a passionate social justice activist and advocate and is involved in anything wonderful that you can imagine about the world and positive change. And she's also friends with Marion. And so when the idea of discussing things to do for a fundraiser came up and Amber wanted to do a comedy show, I volunteered to host the evening. And I thought that's probably the way to do it. I don't like performing in Juneau. I've never done it because you have to see these people in the audience at the Foodland the next day. And I don't want to hear these comments.
The dreaded produce section of Foodland.
Not even kidding. Yeah, well, I better. You know,
believe me, I know. Hey, I'm on the air, man.
I don't know how you do it.
I hear it.
You should be applauded. So I thought, yeah, this would be a great thing to do. I will host the show tomorrow night. And I'm very much looking forward to it. Crystal Saloon is a great place. And we're going to have a silent auction. We're going to tell some jokes. So people who aren't interested in fundraisers and giving to a good cause, they're still getting money for their buck.
A great comedy show. So who's on the bill for the comedy?
Well, this is just it. I don't know these people. Amber knows.
Tell us. Yeah.
Amber went out and selected the performers I'm hosting. So tell us about them, Amber.
Eric Bird is the headliner?
Yes. Yeah. So Eric Bird is. So full transparency, I'm not a comedian at all. So I am not funny. I love sitting next to this guy here. He's so humble and he's amazingly funny. But so I live in Anchorage and I have a friend. His name's Eric. He is a comedian. He's pretty good. We went over to Coots. He introduced me to some of his other funny friends. I was like, hey, I'm doing a fundraiser for my friend. Have you ever been to Juneau? They've never been to Juneau.
All right.
They're excited about coming, so they're going to come down.
Fantastic.
There's three of them landing this evening, and then one is coming tomorrow.
Got a good break in the weather, so they're definitely going to land, no problem.
They're bringing the snow is what I'm thinking, because we are hit with all the snow there in Anchorage right now.
Right.
So now we have a little bit here. But I'm going to show them around. We're going to have a great show. Something else that's been going on is a silent auction. We have that going. There has been a community support. They've donated so many wonderful things.
Is the auction online?
No, it's not online, but we're going to have an online auction.
Okay.
After this,
it's going to keep happening. Yeah,
sure. It's going to keep rolling. This is not going to be the first time that you hear about Marion's Wish.
All right.
Or the last time. And so we're going to get them here and hopefully people come out. The silent auction has things even from like Club Paris and a hotels.com gift card all the way to Glacier Gardens. We have so many supportive businesses in Juneau. We really take care of our
own. I mean, it sounds like it. I mean, it's sold out.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's pretty good. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe like you say, still wander down towards the Crystal, see what's going on. Maybe you can get in. all the VIP seats are gone, right? And all the other how many seats did you have available?
I want to say 124.
Yeah. I was going to say over 100.
Standing
easy.
Room yeah. only. I mean, so there's, I think, 24 VIP seats, and then everything else is general admission.
Nice. So that's great. That really, I would think that makes that's a big chunk of the kind of goal, and you're really on your way to hitting that goal, like you said, of raising $20,000.
Yeah, and we don't want to raise any more. $20,000 is the most we want. So if we get a cent more, that's going to disappoint us. So we want the exact
on
amount.
The money.
That would be ideal.
Playing a game of 21.
That would be ideal.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, and if you do swing by and you can't get in, but there's chances you can, it's a wonderful evening of comedy, but you can also check out some of these great silent auction items.
From the window.
From the window, right, and but then you can
look in, sadly.
Yes.
Pressed up, face pressed against the window. I wish I could get in there.
It's Christmas time. I've got gifts to buy. This could be, you might stumble across something that is the ultimate stocking stuffer for this Christmas. So if you're anything like me, come on by, because this is where you got to buy it.
Well,
because it goes to a great cause as well.
It sounds awesome. Cause. And best wishes to Marion, whose wish was one that is about really her family and about her children and wanting to have something positive happen in this really hard time for her and her family. So it's Marion's Wish. It's happening Crystal Saloon tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Sounds like it's sold out, but you could go down and see if you can get in there. You know, like you say, maybe there's scalpers, maybe, I don't know, bribes. I'm not sure at this point, you know.
it's open.
Yeah.
And you can learn more about everything. If you just Google GoFundMe, Marion's Wish Juno, you can find the fundraiser and you can read a little bit more and kind of follow along as we're doing our fundraising. I'm also going to be posting all the events on that location as well.
So Marion's Wish Juno under the GoFundMe site.
That's
if you just
correct.
Go to that, everyone goes to GoFundMe for different reasons. And so everyone's familiar with that site. Well, it's all going towards a wish of a trip to Disneyland for Marion and her kids, something that I think everyone can understand how nice that would be for a family that is going through a really difficult time. And Amber and John, thanks so much for coming in, telling us about it. Have a great time tomorrow. It sounds like you're already going to have a great time tomorrow. I can tell. I can sense it out of you that you're going to have a great time tomorrow night.
We can't not.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
For
don't
having
miss
us.
It.
That sounds great. All right. Thanks so much for coming in and telling us about it. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host for today, Andy Klein. Well, holiday shopping, if you think you didn't get it done at the public market, we've got good news for you, which is Stuffed is coming up tomorrow. And Stuffed is a lot like a kind of maybe a smaller version, a lot of great local artisans and artists. 36 artists and vendors are at the show for Stuffed. And we've got three of them here with us today. Fubao's here. Fubao, how you doing?
But I'm really excited about this event to just get the word out to people. Come on down to the Jack tomorrow at 10 a.m., 10 to 2.
That's what I was going to ask. 10 to 2 at the Jack is what's going on. Okay. And we're going to talk to you in just a second about what you're specifically going to be showing people. Kate O'Melia is here as well from Chickweed Botanicals. Sorry. And hi, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kesa Corpella is here from Throwing Olives.
Right.
And that is a really, and you do, let's start with you.
Okay.
We'll start with you.
Good.
Which is, so you're, well, you work, do you work with Wild Oven?
No.
Or?
No.
Kind of in conjunction. You do olive work.
We were starting to do some collaborations.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about just sort of the main concept of what you do. Is olive oil or all things olive?
It's olive oil and balsamic vinegars.
Okay.
And I import them in volume and bottle them myself. So my company's name is Throwing Olives. And
so you import them from where?
All over the world.
So olive oil
through Oakland, California.
But I kind of obviously, you know, I know of Italy and I know of Spain, of two olive growing regions.
Okay.
And I guess I've seen California olive oil, but it's all over the place.
All over the world.
Really?
Brazil, Portugal.
What are the conditions and what happens to the olives based on those conditions?
They all have a different flavor, but they're all, if you buy the extra virgin olive oils, you'll taste the different flavors from different countries.
That's the ones that are really the fruity, the all that kind of real flavorful.
But then we do sell flavored olive oils like garlic, for instance, and you're not going to notice where that olive
I'm a purist.
Oil.
I just like the olive oil. Taste of olive oil so
I'm
much.
I'm trying to encourage that because it is a very healthy alternative. So,
and it's also, there's such a variety. I don't think people don't realize how much a variety of the taste of olive oil can be just depending on the region, I guess, or the producer.
I didn't know until I started selling that you can buy a robust olive oil. And it adds a whole different flavor to everything that you cook with it. It's very peppery and it's good. I'm excited about it.
Well, what's your favorite olive oil right now, region, maybe, or the one that you think is of interest right now?
I would probably say the most popular one that I sell is the garlic.
Oh, okay.
But I haven't really quite encouraged enough people to buy the extra virgin olive oils. They're starting to pick it up, but
and the garlic, you infuse it with garlic?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Well, they infuse it.
I see. Oh, you buy it already kind of treated and infused from the producer.
Right.
Oh,
so there's fused, which is you take the like an orange and mix it with the olives directly off the tree and crush it.
Mm-hmm.
That's fused. And then infused is where it's already an extra virgin olive oil that you add the fruit to later. So
that's so cool, isn't it? What a world.
It's
a whole world. It's really cool that you've gotten into it and that you're bringing it to the people of Juneau.
Right. It's real popular.
The hungry people of Juneau that need their healthy olive oil in their life.
Definitely need that healthy olive oil.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you so much. Okay. Well, we'll talk a little further, but that's great. A great summary of what you're doing. And when people go to your booth tomorrow, what will they see?
Lots of bottles.
Little maybe samples, I'm hoping.
Oh, yes. We do tastings. Okay. Definitely do tastings.
Okay, very good.
That's a big popular.
Well, Fuba, tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing. Alaska Photographs, and tell us, what kind of products do you do with all your great photographs that you do?
I sell calendars, notebooks, and prints.
So, and you really concentrate, do you have a variety of calendars or just one set calendar that this is like your year's edition of the 2024 Fubao Photographs of Alaska calendar?
No, I mean, is it going to be just Fubao's 2024 Southeast Alaska Aventos?
Okay, very good. All right. And then your note cards, are the note cards some of the same photographs that are in the calendar or some different ones too?
No, it's true because we got some of my note cards were out of time made, but some of them are made in general, and we have a Made in Alaska logo for them.
Oh, okay. So they're all made in Alaska. Well, that's good to know.
But not all of them.
Okay. All right. But look for the logo.
Yes.
If you're looking for that. Okay. And then also you mentioned calendars, note cards, and prints. So what size prints do you do?
8x8.
8x8, kind of a square or 10x8 maybe?
Yes.
And are they kind of like a glossy, meant for framing kind of a print?
It comes with a bracket.
Comes with a backing?
They're like 8.25 by 8.25.
Okay.
And they're pre-framed with the black dark frame.
Right.
And then he's got some bigger metal prints. He won't have the metal prints on sale tomorrow because they're more than $25. That's the kind of restriction.
But all right.
Those are like 11x14. And then he also has some smaller matted prints if people want something a little bit
Thanks, Claire. I think that's a great explanation of all that stuff. Well, Fubao, I love seeing your calendar at the public market. So is it the same one that you're selling? Okay, that's great. It's beautiful. And it's all these different places that you've gone throughout Southeast Alaska and taken beautiful scenic pictures of Southeast Alaska. I think it's a very calming calendar. When I look at the pictures, I get in a very nice, calm state of mind.
Yes, it's really cool. This is going to be a really fun event. I never done it until last year. My friend recommended this stuff event last year when we did the public market, and I said, "Oh, how about stuff? And how about try to get my foot in the door?"
Yeah, well, you've got it firmly in the door now. Your whole body's in the door now. All right.
This is going to be my, every year, this is going to be my thing every year of doing stuff, public market, pop-up, and goods.
All right. Well, thank you for that great summary of what you're doing, Fubao.
Come on down.
All right. Well, Kate O'Mealy, let's talk about Chickweed Botanicals. You've got kind of this is speaking of calming. This sounds like a thing that you would use for salves and those kinds of things, maybe drop in bath oils, things like that.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So I make teas, tinctures, salves, other botanical skincare with plants that most people might consider weeds. So I specialize in salves and all the skincare stuff with dandelion, with chickweed, plantain, fireweed, nettle, and that is a particular focus that I have.
Is some of the focus on Alaska weeds in particular? Is that like a special interest, or is it more just like you look for what's medicinally, you know, or what's got certain properties?
Well, we're so lucky to live in a place where there's so much incredible medicinal material around us. A lot of what I do is wild foraged. Sometimes I'll supplement with organic materials if I'm making larger batches. But this came from, I used to guide. I used to be a naturalist, and I started nerding out on wild plants and foraging mushrooms. And I started making these salves and these oils and tinctures, and I wanted to find a way to do something I loved, which was making this stuff, and give back to a community that kind of adopted me in the most respectful way possible. So I specifically don't work with Devil's Club. I specifically don't work with any kind of subsistence food. I always, when people ask for it, I will always recommend Native Alaskans who make it here in Juneau. And I work with weeds because no one's ever mad at me for pulling their weeds.
Right.
No one's ever mad at me for that.
Can I pull your dandelions? Yeah, sure. Yeah. Have at
and
it.
And there's so much powerful medicine in plantain, so much in dandelion that is often overlooked, and it's so sustainable using those plants. So it's a way to give back. It's a way to be sustainable. It's accessible to everyone.
Now, people think of like when I list it off, when I see herbal oils, I thought of like salves and bath oils and stuff. But when you said like mists and tinctures, like that's a kind of a different area I wouldn't have thought of in a way.
Mm-hmm. So tinctures are extracted in alcohol or in glycerin, and they pull different constituents from the plant, and they pull it in a more concentrated way. So I make like a sleep tincture from three different plants that is meant to be calming, and you'll like put a few drops under your tongue, hold it there for 30 seconds, and then go to bed.
I want some of that. I'm going to stuff tomorrow to get that.
Thank you so much.
That sounds great.
Yeah, and I also make bitters and magnesium oil sprays with like a hydrosol that I make from fireweed. And magnesium is something we're always deficient in. And
crazy legs syndrome and stuff like that. Exactly. Well, thank you so much for that as well. Go ahead. I was going to throw it back to you and just sort of say the final hours and stuff, but what else? Yeah.
Just come on down, and we need to have a jam-packed Kindle for stuff. We need to have a bumper-to-bumper jam-packed stuff.
Well, it sounds like you've got 36 different vendors at the show, so that's going to pack the jack out already. There's going to be so much variety of stuff, and just the three of you, think about the variety just there. An artist, wonderful things to eat, and wonderful things that for your health and for your well-being, all wrapped up here together. Well, Fubao, thanks so much. Again, it's from 10 to 2 tomorrow, happening at the Jack. It's stuffed, and this is it, folks. I mean, you're going to get your holiday stuff done. You better get it done. Let's get down to the wire. So this is the time to buy. Fubao, thanks so much for coming in. Kate, thank you so much. And Kesa, thank you so much. And have a great market tomorrow at Stuffed. It sounds like a great, great
thank
time.
You.
Thank
All
you.
Right. Thank you, Eddie.
Okay.
Come on down.
Thank you. Welcome back. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K here at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein. And coming up next, a story that most of us in Juno, if we've been here for a little while, are familiar with, but told in a way that's really personal and special. It's the story of Romeo. And Joel Bennett and Lou Isaac are here. Joel Bennett authored a book called The Story of Romeo that's out now. And Lou Isaac was the illustrator of it. Thanks to both of you for coming in. Good to see you.
Nice to see you too.
It was really wonderful to talk to you at Public Market about it and to look at the book. It's beautiful. It's a really such a beautifully illustrated book. And we talked a little bit about some of the ways that the decisions you made about how to illustrate it, watercolors versus oils versus that kind of thing. So tell me a little bit about that. When you started thinking about, I'm going to tell the story of this. I'm going to work with Joel on this book. I'm going to illustrate it. Did you think about, first of all, like, I need this many illustrations? I mean, did those kind of things, are those the first things that come up?
That was always there. Especially with a book that is intended for children, illustrations are a big part of it. And Joel had a lot to say, you know, and he said it in a measured way that sort of took you from one space and one visualization to another one. And so
I was going to say
that. We just started from the beginning and it grew.
Reading the, just flipping through it, I haven't read it carefully, but flipping through it, it did seem like it's a story that's told sort of in vignettes. You know, it's a story that it's multiple stories told from Romeo's perspective. And so it's not like a narrative exactly. It's more like you're wanting to depict, and you turn the page and open up, and there's a whole new small story being told from his perspective.
From my point of view, it's the good kind of book, the one that's full of pictures.
Yeah, right.
I'm a pictures person. So,
well, that's the interesting thing when I think about that, which I, you know, haven't thought about before, but as a artist or illustrator, it's not a small project.
It was not a small project, no.
So how long did it take?
We worked on it for about a year.
About a year.
A year. And what I usually do, I mean, I can do many different kinds of art, but what I usually do and what I love to do is paint in oils. So I started out with oils, which were totally inappropriate to put on paper.
That's good. You have to publish these. It's different than just creating a piece of art.
It needs to fit seamlessly onto paper. And oils are intense and heavy and thick and don't belong on paper in the same way that watercolors belong with paper. So we sort of worked out some images on these oils, and we liked the images, but it was clear that number one, it took too long because you have to wait for the oil to dry, and it just wasn't the appropriate thing. So we switched to watercolors, and there were a couple oil paintings made it into the book. That's some very kind of lighthearted oil paintings, but most of them are watercolors. And watercolors are ephemeral. You know, they fade away, and so they're great for doing imaginative things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it worked out really well. It was painful getting there, but we got there.
Well, it's an interesting thing to turn into a visual art work, because this all started out as an audio exercise.
That's
really right. Tell the story of how it started.
I was commissioned by the music group Orpheus Project to do a performance piece based on the story of Romeo, and I had very little guidance as to how to do it. William Todd Hunt just said, you know, we really want to have the story of Romeo told in a way that, you know, will appeal to people and be appropriate for five instruments. So I just decided pretty early on to do it in stanza form from his point of view, based on the incidents and interactions that I had witnessed over 7 years.
So when you did the audio project, did you sort of see it in the same way? It was Romeo telling the story, and it was Romeo telling these little vignettes of stories, or was that something that developed more for the book?
No, it was we conceived it as a story, having a storyteller. In fact, it was your own Shelley Delaney who was the storyteller in two performances, and then the five instruments. So, that's the way it was conceived and started, and that's the way it ended. And then later, Todd and I were just talking about, why not just, you know, if we can find the right artist and illustrator, let's just convert, you know, adapt this to a book, not really change the words. although one of the stanzas, one of the pages is new. Yeah, really, it was just, of course, the fictional element is the raven. But the raven even has a connection to Romeo in the sense that there are often one or two ravens flying around, flying along with him.
Sort of as scavengers, probably? Is that typical with wolves?
Well, who knows? Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously
guides,
ravens
look... the guides.
Well, yeah, animals right. key off ravens to find food and vice versa.
Oh, yeah, so, sure.
But basically, to have him be kind of a counselor, a wise counselor, was a fictional element. But I think, yeah, that's kind of the story of how it started. And
it's sort of a picture book. I wouldn't call it exactly a children's book, but it's like a young person's book. You know, that's the format of it. When you open it up, it sort of seems like that. Did the material dictate that, or when you started developing it in a visual sense, did you sort of decide that that was a better way to go, or how did you decide what audience you were going to try to?
Well, to tell you the truth, I thought a lot about one of the earliest and most successful young reader books in history, which is called Ferdinand the Bull. Actually, it's called The Story of Ferdinand. And, you know, you can say that's for young people, but it's also got many messages for adults. And, in fact, was banned by Hitler and Franco. It was
that's how you know
written
it was good.
In 1 hour,
yeah,
that's right. Written in 1 hour in 1936. And I thought, well, the story of Romeo has a lot of messages for adults as well as young people. And to have an animal that has been vilified over most of the world for as long as time has gone on almost, and to have an animal characterized as a dangerous animal when very, very few, if any, incidents have ever happened. And then to have this ambassador like Wolf show up to demonstrate that an animal like this can be can interact in a friendly way. It was just amazing to me. And so
it was part of the community.
Part of the community.
Really amazing.
Yeah. I mean, those of us who were here then, it was such a all-encompassing story at the time. And you know, I think a lot of us had our own personal interactions with it. The one kind of story, is that the one that was sort of a very personal story for you?
I think so. I mean, I just thought there had been other books about Romeo, Nick Jan's great book, mm-hmm. you know, Wolf Called Romeo, and photographers had done books, but I just felt like he needed to tell his own story based on, you know, the things that I had witnessed, but also what I felt I could know was going on in his head. You know, he would come and sit with people. He would walk with people. He would ski with people. He would go up into the forest, which most people didn't know about, walking with people. He would cross the glacier occasionally. He would play with dogs. He would turn his cheek when dogs were aggressive to him. I mean, there were all of these most amazing examples of that animal.
Superior intelligence.
To be unlike. actually, any animal I think I've ever met, and I've done lots of natural history programming, television work, many of the programs have been about wolves. I've never witnessed or seen anything like this. So it was truly a unique story that needed to be told. And I think it's Juno's, one of Juno's best treasures to have that story still circulate and to have young people read the story, hear about the story, and maybe have a kinder and gentler attitude towards animals in the future.
When you were thinking about this project, did you think in terms of a certain palette, a certain way of visually telling it?
Well, I mean, Juno has a palette. You know, the colors of Juno are unique in my experience. I mean, I've lived here since 2015, and I lived for a long time before that. in places that were not colored like Juno's colored. But Juno, being so so atmospheric, you know, nothing is ever really strong. You know, it's dramatic. It can be dramatic, but nothing. There's no light that we have that's heavy.
That's true. Visualizing your work in the book, it all has soft edges, right? There's nothing that's in a square. It's all...
Another one of the advantages of watercolor, too, because watercolor kind of mists away at the edges. So, I mean, and to me, Juno is watercolorish. You know, we've got light that changes as you look at it. You know, it goes from yellow to blue to purple just, you know, in the matter of a few minutes. And watercolor does that. So, I mean, we tripped into watercolor, but I think it worked out really well.
And especially the glacier.
Oh, yeah.
And the glacier environment is so otherworldly and mystical.
Right.
And then you throw in Northern Lights and some of the other effects out there light.
Did you have discussions about how to depict Romeo in a way that didn't overly anthropomorphize him, didn't overly caricature him? Just wondering how you decided to strike that balance.
I don't think we discussed that specifically. I think we both respected him. We didn't want to make him into anything that he ever wasn't.
No, most of the illustrations, you know, again, are based on interactions and incidents that I witnessed. So it was pretty easy to, I mean, Lou and I would confer about how best to treat, you know, when Romeo picked up the pug, for instance, and then dropped it, Dr. Palmer's pug, you know, or, you know, when Romeo walked in the woods or when Romeo followed skiers. And we'd sort of discuss, you know, the different options about how to treat that. But
there is no one illustration that was the original one. Everything worked, you know, we tried, and that's another advantage of watercolor too, because if you know how to handle it, it's very quick and it dries quickly. And, you know, you can take something that worked and do another iteration of it, you know, in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
And so it allowed us to let it grow.
Did you, this is a weird question, but did you go look at him? Did you go study him in the visitor center? Or did you stay away from that? What was your feelings about that?
I have only seen him in the visitor center once, and it was a horrifying experience.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, to me, I know that the community was glad to get whatever actual pieces of him they got back, but that's not who he was.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's like a fur coat is not a mink. You know, it's just, they're not the same thing.
Right, right. I'm guessing you studied photographs and studied great books that have been made and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, Joel's a photographer.
Right,
he had lots of photographs. And
did you take film footage as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff. And he kept sending me things, you know, when he'd find more things. And it's easy to find photographic information in Juno about this beloved animal. So that wasn't hard. It was just, you know.
And we did go out and look at some of the features out there, you know, like the
and
rock.
And everybody told me stories.
Yeah.
Right. Once they heard you're working on this,
I'm sure.
That's
right. Yeah.
Well, it's called The Story of Romeo. I could talk to you for a long time about this, but we're running out of time, unfortunately. It's a new book by Joel Bennett, and Lou Isaac is the artist and illustrator of it. Available Hearthside Books and
Juno Artist Gallery.
Juno Artist Gallery as well.
That's right.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks so much to both of you for coming in. I love the book. It's beautiful. And congratulations on the work. It's just a wonderful kind of documentation of something incredibly unique and special that happened here in Juno.
Thanks, Andy.
Joel and Lou, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That's it for Juno Afternoon. Thanks for joining us today and have a fun snowy weekend.